20 years with AT&T, Dan Smithwick founded the Nehemiah Institute in 1986, a nonprofit ministry providing biblical worldview training and worldview assessment programs for use by Christian educators, students, families, and churches. Through the Institute, Dan authored the Pierce Test, a worldview assessment program designed to reveal an individual's worldview on politics, economics, education, religion, and social issues. That's what Pierce stands for. The Pierce Test and Nehemiah's worldview training materials have received critical acclaim and support from high-profile organizations such as Focus on the Family, Christian Film and Television Commission, Answers in Genesis, and the Foundation for American Christian Education, the Colson Center, and Christian Broadcasting Network. As president of Nehemiah Institute, Dan's work is focused on developing new products, reaching a broader audience with Nehemiah's biblical worldview assessment programs and training materials, establishing positive relationships with the media, and assisting Christian educators and students with worldview training programs. In 1997, Dan authored the groundbreaking study course Pillars, and in 1998, he contributed to the MediaWise family with Ted Baer, president of the Christian Film and Television Commission. As a recognized expert on worldview training and assessment, Dan has made many radio guest appearances, including Point of View, Issues in Education, Southwest Radio Church, and Reasons for Faith. In addition to his business career and ministry work, Dan has been an active voice in Christian education for over 30 years, serving as board member of several Christian schools, as well as teaching in a private school. Dan also serves on the Executive Council of the Coalition on Revival Ministries, a ministry providing world-class theological studies for churches and Christian education institutions, and is also a member of the steering committee for its sister organization, the International Church Council Project. Dan currently resides in Winter Garden and Sarasota with his lovely wife, Jean. Oh, there she is. Okay.
Good morning. Well, let's see. We have to change this out to a different one. Well, good morning again to all of you. I share and echo all of Roxanna's statements about the importance of dealing with education. I also want to repeat what she said, that we intend for this to be the first of several of these kinds of seminars, perhaps right at this facility, two or three times a year, while we will address ongoing topics related to the restoration of education. So that's our goal. We'll see how today goes and what interest there is to continue this, but that's what this is about. I'm delighted to reconnect with some old friends, and I'm very happy to make many new friends. I like to be very approachable. I'm happy to take phone calls. You're happy to have my cell phone number, which is at our table where my wife, Jean, will be at off and on throughout the day, and I'll try to be there too. So thank you for giving up a day to come here and to partake in what we're doing to share some information about the restoration of education. I think this is the first church building I've been in. I've been in several around the country where there's no clock on the back wall. That says something about the preacher's sermons, doesn't it? So I have a watch here. I'm going to try to stick to the schedule, but someone please tell me when it's about 9:20, because I'm supposed to stop talking at that time so you can... We can stay the schedule. There are several free handouts at our booth. I'll explain a couple of those a little bit later. But now I'd like to go into this, what I call the Kingdom Seminar. I developed this seminar. This is a half-day seminar that I do in churches around the country. There's three parts. I'm going to give two today. I have this picture that's meant to be somewhat like a kingdom idea. I love Lord of the Rings. I think that might have come from that film. But I'm trying to do some things to help the church the body of Christ understand the gravity of the situation that we face. And I'm hoping that today, with what we're all doing, will impact you in some ways that when you leave, you will say, I've got to share this with someone. Because we're very close, I trust you would agree with this, of losing our republic. There are things that have happened in the last while that is a very grave situation, and there's more things coming. And I very much believe in the sovereignty of God. God is not caught by surprise on these things that happen. But there are times in history when God's people seem to have just kind of taken their hands off the wheel, and we pay a price for that. And I think that's where we're headed. I think we're going to pay an enormous price for being disobedient in a number of ways over the years. So we're talking about restoration, and that means work. That means have a plan and work your plan. So I'm going to be walking through two things in two presentations that I have about that kind of a thought of how to think about rebuilding a fallen culture. The three sessions consist of these particular presentations. The first one, which I'm not doing today, overview of biblical history. We are a young earth creationist ministry. We hold to that view of creation. And we go through this and show key things that have happened over the 10,000 years or less that we've been around. I call it the amazing story. And then the one that I will be doing first is this one, overview of America's history. I call it the forgotten story. I make the case that we have forgotten who we are, where we come from, and so forth. So we're going to take a look at our 400-year history. And this afternoon, I'll give this one, overview of youth worldview, which I call the troubling story. Give some more insights into the things that Roxanna was addressing about the young people vacating, abandoning church. So the first one, which is number two of the three-part seminar, overview of America's history and history of education in America. We really have to understand that. We have to know what went wrong. How did the wheels come off of education? Because if we don't know that, we're likely to not put in the right fix. And we're just going to keep prolonging the problem that we have. I'm sure you're familiar with these, but let's look at these. Deuteronomy 8, you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the power to get wealth, that he may confirm his covenant that he swore to your fathers as it is this day. And if you forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them, I solemnly warn you today, you surely shall not perish. You shall surely perish. Like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you, so you shall perish, because you would not obey the voice of the Lord your God. Many, many places we find in the book of Deuteronomy about don't forget, don't forget, don't forget. And what have we done? We forgot. We forgot who's in charge. We forgot who we are, his purposes for redeeming us. So the battle of our day. I'm going to change up something here. When I thought about what we're trying to do today and the message that we want to give to you in as succinct form as possible, I thought of a particular verse that I think characterizes what's going on in America and what we're going to have to do to change direction. And that one verse is this. But he answered and said, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth from the mouth of God. It's my conviction that the secularist in our day, the socialist and the Marxist, are determined to show us that Jesus didn't know what he was talking about. That man can perfectly live well apart from every word that proceeded from the mouth of God. They hate the word of God. And they believe that people like us who believe in the word of God believe that we need to know and live by every word that proceeded from the mouth of God. They think we're fools. And I'm going to show you some quotes later that makes it very clear that they think we need to be saved. Their interpretation of saved. They see us as the problem. and they're determined to erase, eliminate, do whatever's necessary, the mistake that was made in Western civilization at large, America in particular, about this idea of a Christian religion. This is a war. It's a war to the death, truly. These people are determined to erase that mistake, and they have made it their plan. They do have a plan. It is their plan to work it through generations of young people. If they can get the young people, they will eventually have the culture. And that's the battle that we are facing. So we really have to back up a bit and understand who we are. And I always begin with this, identifying the ship that came to our shores. Actually, there were a few ships. There was earlier than this one was the ships that were came to Jamestown, but I'm picking up the story at Plymouth, or Cape Cod, where this ship landed in November 9th, 1620. So we're here 400 years, you know, right to the year. 102 passengers on this ship, pilgrims and others. At a particular importance, there were 41 men aboard who signed a document while they were still on the ship describing how they would govern themselves once in the new land. That's significant. They had the sense, the conviction of God that when they got off that ship and were going to start this new idea, a new city, a new world, they had to have some agreement. How are we going to get along? How are we going to work together? How are we going to govern ourselves? And so they drafted a document known as Mayflower Compact, still recognized as our oldest governing document for America. Significant in what it says. We'll look at some of that. So I do say we have forgotten from where we came, and now we have lost our way. Two questions. Why the shift in America from essentially a Christian nation to essentially a secular nation? It's easy to show that we were once essentially Christian. Not everybody was a Christian, but essentially our culture was Christian. And today it's also easy to show that we are a secular nation. The public square in America is thoroughly secular. Nothing to do with God. You don't hear Christianity, the church, and God and Christ brought up on the evening news as solution to problems, or that we should honor him, Christ. We kicked God out of the schools several decades ago. So we are thoroughly, essentially, a secular culture, a nation. How did that happen? You know, what happened over the many years that it gradually just changed? And now we wake up one morning and say, wow, something is different. We're not the same people anymore. Second question, why are Christian education institutions going secular? This is even a bigger heartache. And this is happening. I carry a few fat books with me when I do presentations. I always tell Christians you need to have a few fat books. All kinds of footnotes. That's where you really learn some stuff. This one's called The Dying of the Light. I'll have this at the table if you want to look at it. It's an amazing story. A Catholic priest wrote this. His order gave him funding for 10 years to research why were Christian universities shedding their identification with their denomination and going secular. So he studied 3 Catholic universities and 14 Protestant universities over 10 years. And in 750 pages, he tells why they shed their connection to their denomination and went secular. It's heart-wrenching. I was so enthralled by it, I tracked him down, got him on the phone. He's since retired, maybe passed by now, because this was several years ago. And he told me more of the story, and I don't have time to tell you what he came up with as the main reasons. But these things are important to know. Why are our education institutions going secular? And now with the work that I do with peers testing, I'm watching that happen even in our Christian schools at K-12. Going secular, going with the flow of culture. I mean, we're making a huge appeal for Christians to leave the public school system, the government-run socialist school system. And I know that's fraught with all kinds of issues. But it's also a heartache that the good majority of our Christian schools are not all that biblically based. So there's problems. So here is the story of the forgotten story. And I do this with this chart that I did not invent. Gentleman's name up on top, Dr. Stiles, did this work some years ago. He was doing his doctorate work at Liberty University, put together this chart. I first saw it in the mid-90s, so for 20 years, I've been showing his chart with his permission, and I've added a new piece to it at the end, which I'll get to. I have a copy of this chart for you at the table, so you don't have to make a whole lot of notes and try to memorize it. I have a copy for you. I don't give it out in advance because it's interactive. I have to ask you some questions as we go along. So I want to keep you awake. I want to get you involved with what we're saying and so forth. But what he did was to take a look at America's history, or, you know, as a nation, and divided it into six different eras: colonial education era, early national era, state school era, remaking of society era, post-Christian era, and then the New World Order era. And in each of those eras, he identified the period of time, the character of the people, what is real, what did the people use to determine what is real, how we know what we know. Anybody know the 50-cent word for that? How we know what we know? Epistemology. So you learned a big word today. Demonstration of the good life. How did people determine this is the good life? So we're going to walk through these. And this will tell the story about what happened to America. This chart is of extreme importance. Every time I've given this in churches, I would regularly hear people say, I never knew that about America. I was never taught that. One time I was in a church out in Nevada, about halfway through this, a lady put up her hand and said, Mr. Smithwick, she said, I'm troubled. I'm wondering why we haven't heard this in our church. And her pastor's sitting right here. So I tried to say something to make it, well, it was not his fault. But so anyway, the first one, colonial education era, 1620 to 1776. 1620, why? It's when the ship landed. 1776, why? Constitution, Declaration of Independence, right. Character of the people was just basically Christianization. That's who they were. They put together a culture and a work style and religious habits and whatnot, Christian people. What is real was God and Christ in God. Now, that's significant the way this is done. God umbrella, Christ in God. That was to say they're not Unitarians, they're Trinitarian. They held to a Trinitarian understanding of God, Christ in God. Every cult, every aberrant religion that still says something about Jesus Christ, it's in the vein of he's not God, but he's a really good guy. That's not where our founding fathers come from, the early people. How we know what we know was first Bible in first place, reasoning and subjection to the Bible. God gave us the ability to reason. That's a gift from God. It's how we're wired. But that has to be in submission to revelation, to the scripture. Demonstration of the good life was simply live the Christian life. This is the way it was for 150 years. This was America. This was our founding. That's the way that kids were taught and the way life was explained to work. Then we go into the early national era, 1789 to 1870. Why 1789? Ratification of the Constitution. Took a while. They fought over a lot of things, important things. And I'll explain 1870 in the next era. Now, he said the character was switched from Christianization to nationalization, which is somewhat understandable. I mean, they become their own nation, United States of America. So it was thinking of themselves as a nation. What is real? God, Christ, and then science. Sure, we can learn some things, and science is important. Science is, you know, it's all of God. So we use science to help us understand God's creation and how we're to use creation, but in submission to Christ and God. How we know what we know. First sign of a little slip, putting reason on the same plane as the Bible. Get revelation from the Bible about truth, but you can also just reason yourself to that. You don't have to go to the scriptures to know things rightly. Demonstration of the good life, Christian life, but then also just be a good citizen. If you don't profess to be a Christian, okay, but just be a good citizen. Then we move into the third era, state school era, 1870 to 1918. 1870, why? It was a year, the first year, it was the year that a first state school board came into existence. You know what state? Massachusetts. And that was the beginning of transitioning education from family church responsibilities, usually with hired tutors who were committed Christians, to letting the state do it. Massachusetts was the first state that adopted a state school board. So a 50-year period here, character of the people was Americanization. Let's be Americans. What is real? Science and God on the same plane, maybe even given science first place. How we know what we know? Reasons first. Bible, yeah, you can still use that. Or just individual desires. What do you want to be real? Sounds like today, right? We still believe that. Demonstration of the good life, citizenship first, and then the Christian life. So you can see a little bit of transition. The way Dr. Stiles was putting this together, which he gathered by reading all kinds of writings, sermons from that era, from those eras, publications, books that were used in universities, to begin to see this shift, ever so slow, moving away from being distinctly Christian to being something nice but not Christian-based, just good citizen. 1918. Why did he end it in 1918? I don't know. I was never able to find out. I can tell you why in that decade. I think 1910 to 1920 was probably America's darkest decade policy-wise. Certainly the Civil War was a very dark decade. But policy-wise, there were some things that happened in that decade that was bad news. 1910 to 1920. Wish I had time to go into that. But in the middle of this time, or right prior to this time of the state school era, we have what I identify, so I'm inserting this now because this was not something he had in his chart. I refer to the 1859 problem. 1859 is a major year, and I've created this graphic to help you remember it. There are three things that are identified with the year 1859 that identifies why we are here today. So these are important. First one, three gentlemen, Horace Mann. He went to Prussia, not Russia, Prussia, studied their socialist education system, loved it because he was an atheist at heart and he thought socialism was really a good way to corral the people and make everybody, you know, do all the same stuff. Well, he died in 1859, so that's his connection to 1859. Then, 2 months later, John Dewey is born. So obviously they never met. But John Dewey picked up Horace Mann's ideas, convictions, and John Dewey put wheels to those ideas. John Dewey is known yet today as the father of American education. John Dewey, like Horace Mann, was an atheist. John Dewey grew up in a Christian home. His mother was a very devout Christian. By the time he was 21, he was a fierce atheist. And he set out to develop a way to stop the problem of taking little boys and girls. This is in his own writings. He said there's two major evils that we're doing with young people. In schools, we're teaching them to pray to someone who's not there. And we're teaching them to read a book of myth. And he set out to change that and fix that problem. He said, we have to de-Christianize the classroom. Took 100 years, but he got his wish. We've de-Christianized the platform, which was John Dewey's passion. John Dewey is very hard to read, but you know, he started a lab school in Chicago It didn't go well, but it helped him figure out how to do things better. He moved to New York City and set up the teacher college system. We used to have colleges in cities across America that were called teacher colleges. Now they're all part of the university system. We don't call them that anymore. There was one in my hometown community up in Fargo-Moorhead country in North Dakota, Minnesota, Moorhead State Teacher College. So if you want to be a teacher, you go to a teacher's college and you learn all about teaching, education, philosophy, and whatnot. That was John Dewey's work because he knew that was really important in education. And he's right about this. You've got to have the teachers properly trained. It's everything. Train the teachers is far more important than curriculum. Far more important. That's what most Christian schools don't do well, is training their teachers. So with those two guys and their views shedding the Bible, they needed another resource that could define things like, where did all this stuff come from? How did we get here? Who are we? And a third guy shows up, and he's also related to 1859 in this way. Charles Darwin, in 1859, publishes his major work, Origin of Species. John Dewey found his Bible. This was the truth. This is the foundation that we have to know where we come from, how we got here, how we're continuing to evolve, and so forth. John Dewey, a primary proponent of pragmatism, major voice of progressive education, founder of functional psychology, child-centered education. That's a very bad phrase. I hope you don't believe that. We don't want child-centered education. What do we want? Yes, but. This is the way I say it. I'm being a little bit picky here, but I say we want teacher-centered education. And if it's proper, biblically-based philosophy of education, it will become Christ-centered. But teacher-centered education is absolutely critical. In other words, when the children come into a classroom, they need to know that that teacher is the authority in that room. And they need to honor that person as the authority and respect them. It used to be like that, right? You remember those days. Didn't you respect your teachers? You recognize them? We've lost, you read the whole horror stories about what teachers are suffering today in their own classroom, and they can't do anything about it. Why? What does that come from? Because the wheels have come off our culture. He was a signer of the first Humanist Manifesto. We show a chart like this, Dewey's legacy in education. You know, we started out well with a biblical worldview, the essence of being a Christian culture, gradually being erased, and then Dewey shows up, and for 100 years, he almost lived to be 100 years old, he really put the wheels on erasing that. So today, we pretty much erased out biblical worldview as a thought in America. That's pretty much gone. I mean, there's only a people like us in small percentages that think about biblical worldview. You just don't hear, you know, at family reunions talking about biblical worldview. That just doesn't happen. In fact, if you bring it up, it's probably not going to go well. It's just where we are. So back to our chart. Remaking of society era. Remaking is a good word for what he's saying happened. And now we got to remake it because it was wrong. So we're going to remake it. 1918 to 1963. Whoa, what happened in 1963? Why did he pick that year? A couple of big things. That was earlier, 1 year, 62. 63, assassination of Kennedy. That was a really big thing. That really shook America's soul. It's one of those things, you know where you were at when it happened. How many of you, I'd like to see a show of hands if you're old enough. Where were you at when Kennedy was shot? Half of us, maybe a little more. I do. You know what I was doing? I was doing what I'm doing right now. I was standing, teaching some people. I was in the military in this thing that Roxana, cryptology, whatever that is. And I had this classroom of military people, soldiers and officers and whatnot, teaching about cryptology. And at 2:30 in the afternoon, an officer comes rushing into the room. Kennedy's been shot. The president's been shot. And it was like the clock stopped. We just froze in our tracks. It was only 100 miles from where we were at, because I was in Texas. And, you know, we didn't know we were at war. And so the base was locked down. It was really a scary time. And all across America, you know, it was a really significant thing. And then that night, those of you who raised your hands, you may remember this, Walter Cronkite, remember him on TV? And he announces about 5:36 o'clock what? The president's dead, with a tear in his eye. And it really had an impact on who we were. So maybe that's why he chose 63, I'm not sure. It might have been because the Beatles showed up. That happened in 1963. Not sure. So he says, character of the people was democratization. We now had this idea that we were a democracy, which we're not. What are we? A republic. What kind of republic? Constitutional republic. That's a whole story in itself. I'll let Dixie teach you about that, that why we're not a democracy, we're a republic. A science, first place, what is real, then God, still there. How we know what we know, reason, individual desires, then Bible, third place, he put it. Demonstration of the good life, citizenship, moral life, some kind of a moral life, and self-actualized life. That's just another word for pop psychology. So that was what he called the remaking of society era. Then we have to look at this a little bit closer, because I want to show you what happened in this era that's of great significance. We transition, so I show it like this. We transition from we the people to we the masters. Our Constitution was we the people, rightly understood, in God. Somehow that whole idea of governance changed to we the masters, and I take it you get what the picture means, that they tell us what's right. They tell us what we can do, what we can't do. It's a huge problem that's developed. And I call it Plan A and Plan B. And in particular, year 1930, you could draw a line down the chart in 1930, because 1930 was also a very, very big importance in America's history. Let me finish this one. Rule by constitutional republic or rule by edict, executive orders. You know, that problem is blue and red. You know what I mean? We got to understand that. This idea of governance by all these executive orders, instead of really letting the Constitution, letting us live by that, is a real significant problem. But 1930, what happened in 1930? This is one of the main things I want to communicate in this particular presentation. In 1930, there were a group of Marxists in Germany who had established a school called the Frankfurt School. And they fled Germany because they were at odds with Hitler over some things. And they fled and took the school and reestablished it in America, in New York City, at Columbia University. And guess who they found there? John Dewey. It was a perfect storm. Here John Dewey was building the teacher college system to train teachers across America, and here are the Marxists with their ideology that they're absolutely convinced is what's going to save the world. They put the ideology with John Dewey's system, and they have now for 90 years been changing education in America. They started at the university level, working in their Marxist ideas. They took their brightest students, put them back in to be professors so they could continue to teach that. Then they moved down into secondary education. And today, the Marxist plan is in K-6. Right, Roxana? Absolutely, they're doing it. All the stuff that we're reading about, the transgenderism nonsense and all those, the sexuality issues, part of their plan. The destruction of the nuclear family, biblically based, all of that's part of the Marxist plan. They are working their plan. We don't even have a plan of any real significance, but we need to develop one. Now, I know there's a lot of people that are carrying the same passion that we're sharing with you today, and they're doing some things to help think about how we're going to solve this problem. God has his people. God always has his remnant. But I do have to say that I think we're not very well far along in this. We don't really have a workable plan. We have a lot of thoughts, and I'm very honored to work with FACE, Foundation for American Christian Education. I think it's the top education institution in America. I do believe that. And I think what's happening through FACE and other organizations like Pilgrim Institute in Indiana are people that are seeing where we went wrong and how we're going to have to correct that. And we have to do this rightly in K-12 education with very excellent teacher training. If that isn't happening, we're never going to fix this problem. So the story of the Marxists is told in this book. It's one of two things that I have, and I'm hoping you will pick up these two items. So first time, this is political correctness. We picked this up, we published this about a year and a half ago. It's a story of how these Marxists came. It identifies who they are by name, by timeline, by bios and whatnot. And it shows in there, I mean, you read this thing and you say, I can't believe this. These guys actually said they're going to do these things, and they're doing it. This is, we have given away many copies of this to pastors and leaders, and most of them said, we didn't know this stuff. That's why they're not doing sermons on education and all of the things that need to be done. So the book explains how they partnered with John Dewey, how they've infiltrated K-16 education, and how they're promoting socialism via media, higher education, and entertainment. And so there's two of these books, this one and what Roxana mentioned about our Pillars course. And so we're asking that you would pick up these two copies and make those a read for this year. Back to our chart. Post-Christian era. Well, now that's really an interesting title. Post-Christian, what does that mean? After, right? Christian era is gone. Now we're going to do something else. So post-Christian era, that's the title he gave this, 1963 to 1993. Another little bit of an obscure year. I'll tell you why I think it was. I don't know this for sure. Character of the people, individualization. When we bought into the idea of democracy, we the people understood wrongly, instead of by law, it was an easy transition to me the person. And so the whole thing about me really became part of our culture in this time frame. What is real, science, and then New Age, the whole New Age, you know, Eastern religion problem. How we know what we know, individual desires, first, reason and experience. Demonstration of the good life, self-actualization, citizenship, and some sense of morality. So, excuse me. When you look through this period of time frame, what's missing? God, Bible, church. It's easy to see why he called it post-Christian. And it is post-Christian. In the culture, there's no place, there's no conversation about God, Bible, church. It just doesn't show up. The church doesn't get invited to the table politically to solve problems. We just don't have a place. We don't have anything to say. So it's like, why should we invite you? Why 1993? I think this is why, but I'm not totally certain. But I do know this. It was the first year in America that a state university started offering a course on postmodernism. It was called Postmodernism Philosophy or something. University of North Carolina, which is a hotbed for postmodern thought, two professors in particular put together this course, 5-credit course, Postmodernism. It was the first school in America to do that. So that would fit well for why he chose, because that was a mile marker. Postmodernism. What does postmodernism mean? It means, Tim, you have your truth, and I have my truth. Let's just agree to disagree. Try to still be friends. That's one of the hallmarks of postmodernism. Another is, there is no such thing as objective truth. We have truths. How does that fly with the Bible? No such thing as objective truth? Wow. Throw the Bible out, because it says it's true. So that was a big deal. Then the New World Order era. Where did you first hear that phrase? Bush, on TV one time, talks about we're moving towards the New World Order era. And remember how he said it? He said, and when we get there, and we will. I mean, it was like they already had this idea, and they're working their plan, and they are. 1993 to who knows when. That was his. Dr. Stiles finished his chart with this. He didn't know how long this was going to run. And he called the character of the people a reculturalization. They were being reculturalized, being something different than they had ever been. What is real? New age and science. How we know? What we know? Individual desires and this thing called postmodernism. And then demonstration of the good life was to be politically correct. That was a phrase that the Marxists come up with, by the way. But you could demonstrate that you're a good person if you just be politically correct. How much have you had that drilled into you? You're supposed to be politically correct. Don't offend anybody. You know, just compliment everybody. You know, so look at this whole transition from a Christianized people to today, where now we call immorality good. It took a long time, but here we are. And God help us, if we stay there much longer, this is going to be not good. In fact, I'll say it here. I might say it again. I am very, very, very much of the opinion that we're about this far from God's limits of saying I've had enough, like he did with Israel many times. And when we would get to that point where God says I've had enough, what would he do? He'd pull a chain, and it would hurt. And something would happen, and they knew they were in big trouble with God. I think we're getting very close to that time. I don't know what it is. Well, I can give you some ideas, but I don't have time for that. So I think we've reached this. In fact, now I'm going to show you, one more piece to this. I forgot I added this just recently. Because this is a new word, right? Woke. Are you awake? That's what this word means. Here's the definition of woke. A term that historically referred to awareness of issues that concern social justice and racial issues. Woke, meaning to be awakened, resurfaced in 2014 during the Black Lives Matter. So today, we're supposed to be, well, we're supposed to be, you know, all caught up in this awareness of all these injustices, real or imagined to be real. It is a label for vigilance and activism concerning real or thought to be real racial inequalities and other social disparities such as discrimination against the LGBTQ, I think there's a whole bunch of more letters now, community, women, and immigrants. How many genders are there today? I think I saw 52 one time on Google. Maybe there's more. I mean, they just keep making up genders. I know. So, the forgotten story, having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancements of the Christian faith in the honor of our king and country. Where do those words come from? Mayflower Compact. That's what started this nation. People believe this. They live by this. Then we've transitioned over these many years to the help of John Dewey, who was a signer of the Humanist Manifesto. Reading the Humanist Manifesto is like reading a church's statement of faith. In that book, the number one, 1933, the sixth commandment, if you would, it says, we are convinced that the time has passed for theism and deism. What is theism? It's an acknowledgement that he's there, that this is his world, and we have to obey him. And the humanists who are working their plan, I'm telling you, in education, they're saying the time has come for theism to be passed. Let's paraphrase that. They believe this, no question about it. What that means is that our time in this room, our time has passed. Our ideas, our convictions, they've got to go. That has to go. This is the war that we're facing. They're telling us this myth that you guys have hung on to all these decades, it has to go. And we're going to make sure it goes by taking control of education. And we're going to change your kids. We're going to save your kids. We probably can't save you, but we're going to save your kids. We're going to deliver them from the nonsense that you've been teaching them all these decades. That, my friends, is the war that we're facing today. And if we don't find ways across America to do something like we're doing here today, this republic is going to die. We're going to find ourselves in Venezuela or some other country that threw it away. This is going to hurt. So I'm probably saying it too often, but I'm going to keep reminding us that this is serious stuff. This is not just, well, nice to have these little ideas, do our own little things. No, we're talking about saving the republic, saving a nation. Because these guys are working their plan. Two questions here. Where are we going now, and how should we then live? Who said that? Who wrote that? Schaefer. Mm-hmm. He saw it, and he wrote a lot of good things about that. You should be reading Schaefer if you haven't. But we never come up with a plan. We've lamented the problem, and a lot of other writers, good Christian leaders, have lamented the problem, but we yet today don't have a real solid plan of how to get out of this mess. 5-6 years ago, when looking at this chart, as I mentioned earlier, I felt like there needed to be a new era added because Dr. Stiles stopped at a little after the mid-90s. So 5-6 years ago, I added a column to the chart. Actually, I had it in two columns and I said, or this or that, and here they are. I said that by 2020, I said this 5 years ago, by 2020, we are going to go to a new era that's either going to be one of these two, a biblical worldview era time frame or a dark age era. The period of time would be 2020 until, so I put the question mark there. The character of the people would be Christian like it was or a barbarian. Have we seen some barbarianism in the last year and a half? What is real would be biblically defined again, or man defined. How we know what we know would be biblical education or forced indoctrination. I keep hearing that phrase a lot of how teachers in the state schools are leaving because they're being forced to commit indoctrination upon their kids. And demonstration of the good life will once again be with Christian ethics and liberty, or it is simply going to be survival in bondage. Because if we don't fix this problem, we are going to find ourselves living in a time when survival is the name of the game. We could just get from today to tomorrow to next month. Because when things go out, like when the lights go out, if things really go bad, if God yanks a chain and systems get shut down, so he reminds us once again whose world it is, God help us. I can't believe I'm at the end, 10 minutes early. Should I stop? I'm going to stop because we might want to make up some time later. So I want to remind you about the refreshments in the cafeteria. The ladies have put together some wonderful refreshments. Do that. Stop at the tables. Get this chart. We have some other free things there. One of them, this little packet called the Kingdom Seminar, this is for you to take and give to your pastor and say, you know, maybe we should bring this Kingdom Seminar into our church. That's what I'm doing for that.